Shalom. Welcome to another episode of Inspiration from Zion. I'm Jonathan Feldstein, and I have the privilege of being your host, coming to you from the Judean Mountains here in Israel. I like to refer to it as the original Bible Belt. Inspiration from Zion is a program of the Genesis 1-2-3 Foundation, whose mission is to build bridges between Jews and Christians with Israel in ways that are new, unique, and meaningful. I pray that you will find this, all of those. Through this program, we're excited to connect you to people and stories in and relating to Israel to give you a window to look through, experiencing aspects of life here that you might not otherwise know about. We want this to be interactive, so please be in touch with us at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com and send along any questions and any comments about any topic anytime. Or you can reach us through all the social media or at genesis123.co. Stay tuned until the end, where we're also going to offer you an exciting opportunity, and please feel free to share this with others who will also find it of interest. A little over a week ago, I was watching the Charlie Kirk Memorial and was inspired by many of the speakers and their celebration of Charlie's life and legacy. The memorial has been described properly as one of the most powerful and uplifting spiritual events this century and perhaps in the last 100 years. Paying proper tribute to a giant of a man who was cut down in the prime of his life. There were and are many reasons to celebrate Charlie Kirk's life and legacy, one which we pray we will continue to inspire here and will continue for generations. I was moved by the expressions of faith and the deep emotions that were expressed. It was late at night here in Israel, and as I watched, I was rapt. I was surprised to see, however, Tucker Carlson introduced, and my ears picked up when I heard him mention Jerusalem. For me, while not taking away from any of the other hours of tributes and worship, Tucker's one-minute opening, in which he referred to his favorite story in the whole Bible, hit a nerve and reeked of anti-Semitism. I responded viscerally with a social media post calling him out. The responses to this were diverse, including support and agreement for my statement, to confusion and lack of understanding why I would say such a thing. I realized that something that I already knew, that for many Jews, we are programmed to hear and see things that are anti-Semitic in ways that quite naturally other people who are not Jewish wouldn't see or understand. As president of the Genesis 1-2-3 Foundation, whose mission is to build bridges between Jews and Christians, I realized that we needed to have a dialogue about this. Too many Jews think that the rest of the world sees and understands the things that we do. They don't. Too many reflexively brand people as anti-Semites when they make a comment that might be anti-Semitic. I believe there's a difference. Too many see Charlie Kirk and conservative Christians in general as an enemy, and that they all have a nefarious agenda. They don't. On the other hand, too many Christians are unaware of and not sensitive to the many issues that we have had to deal with over millennia as targets and victims of what's been referred to as the oldest hate. Too many think that we play the anti-Semitism card a little too freely and do not understand why some things that indeed are anti-Semitic are problematic. And too many Christians don't understand how, for a very long time, anti-Semitism and persecution of Jews was at the core of the church, crimes committed against the Jewish people in the name of Jesus. I have been grateful for those reaching out to me with expressions of support and others with expression of concern. The concern is largely recognizing my role in building bridges and that this conversation might be seen by others as building barriers. People are concerned that my reputation might be tarnished. I appreciate that more than I can express and pray that this conversation will be enlightening and serve the intended goal to build bridges. Today, we are here to have a conversation, not a crucifixion. I understand that it's better to have Christians be the main speakers to help create understanding among Jews and Christians. Indeed, Charlie Kirk was known for engaging some of the most difficult conversations about a wide range of topics with people with whom he disagreed, but he did so civilly and respectfully. I hope today that we will rise to his example Many people have turned to making Charlie Kirk's legacy in their own image, to demonstrate that he was good or bad, that he believed in X and not Y, to prove their point. That's not the point here at all. We seek to raise the bar, to leave this conversation elevated, even if not in agreement. And today, I'm actually really thrilled to welcome four guests as part of our panel, who I hope will be, who I know will be a central part of that elevation. In alphabetical order, Alejandra Bistrian is a native of Colombia and lives in Dallas with her husband and three daughters. She graduated from Christ for the Nations Institute and has a degree in communications from Dallas Baptist University. She works to foster reconciliation and friendship between Christians and Jews and to help the church understand God's purposes for Israel and the church by equipping them with a biblical foundation to hear God's heart for his chosen people. Reverend Becky Keenan is president of One with Israel, a movement committed to demonstrating support for Israel, transcending barriers, and reaching people of different ages, backgrounds, and affiliations. She has been to Israel numerous times. She lives in Houston, is married with two children. Gabe McCowan is the son of a Baptist minister and was born and raised in Oklahoma, where he lives with his wife and two children. He's a longtime supporter of Israel and has also visited multiple times. He has a long career in regulatory compliance, specifically in the energy industry. And Pastor Dumasani Washington is CEO of the Institute of Black Solidarity with Israel and former diversity outreach coordinator for CUFI, Christians United for Israel. He hosts the Truth to Power with Dumasani Washington radio program and is a graduate of the San Francisco Conservatory of Music, an author whose latest book is called Zionism and the Black Church, Why Standing with Israel Will Be a Defining Issue for Christians of Color in the 21st Century. He lives in North Carolina with his wife. They have six children and three grandchildren. Today, as we always do, with no disrespect to our panelists, we dispense with titles and we're all just by first name. And I'm Jonathan. Welcome to all of you and thanks for joining today.
Thank you for having us.
So I want to jump in with something, and we'll do this back and forth, and I hope that you will all freely not just answer questions that I may prompt you and that have been asked by our live audience in advance and that may come up during the course of the conversation, but I want you to interact with one another. And I alluded to it, and I do believe it's true, but I like your comments as we start out. A lot of Jewish voices and organizations have called out Tucker on this and in general. I do think that sometimes we have a bit of an overdeveloped radar and vigilance for anti-Semitism. I'm wondering if any of you would like to jump in on that so we kind of set the stage on your perspective, Christians, on where we are coming from as the Jewish people. Anyone like to begin? Alejandra, you're nodding.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for inviting me to this discussion. I so appreciate it. And thank you for giving us all the space to discuss Tucker. Me personally, I have been disheartened by just the amount of comments and anti-Semitic propaganda coming from Tucker. And focusing on Charlie Kirk's memorial, I think maybe for the majority of Christians, if you're coming from a Christian perspective, maybe it was hard a little bit to understand where he was coming from. But once you understand the history of anti-Semitism, you understand also the history of Christian persecution, and also the idea of deicide that was used by the Nazi propaganda, you can sort of understand the undertone of Tucker's comments. And first of all, just the idea of him just saying people eating hummus, you know, I felt that was very derogatory. But just the implication that he was saying basically Jesus was he was implying that Jesus was killed by the Jews because of what he said. And to me, that just, first of all, Jesus himself said that no one takes his life. He surrendered his life willingly. But the idea of blaming a group of people for the crucifixion of Jesus, it's been used in history, and it's been used to just build hatred against right. the Jewish community. And I felt, knowing also what has transpired in the past couple of years since October 7, and understanding his obsession with Jewish people, I felt fully where he was coming from, and I felt that he was definitely trying to point an accusation against the Jewish people.
Thank you. Sure. I want to come back to that and digress or go in tangents with all the other panelists, but I do want to come back, if you don't mind, Becky, Gabe, Dumasani, what are your thoughts in terms of the Jewish people's radar vis-a-vis anti-Semitism? Is it a flag that's played too much?
I think, I think when there's been more than 50 some genocides throughout history perpetrated against a people, you can never be hyper anything. I think you're informed. I think it creates an awareness, obviously. So to the Jewish community watching this, I would say you're doing what you have to do. You have survived all this time. You've been persecuted. And unfortunately, us Christians have played a huge and enormous role in that. Now, to the Christian people watching this, I would say we're living at a time where there is a high rate of Bible illiteracy, historic illiteracy. People are very emotional. And if we want to be in this space, and if we want to be righteous, we're just having to understand we have to spend time educating ourselves and understanding the past, understanding what's happened with our history alongside the Jewish people, and what is happening in the present. And it's not about sound bites and 30-second commercials or reels. It takes time. And if you love your children, you're just going to have to take the time, sit down, educate yourself. And I know that many of us have resources. Jonathan can make everything available to you. But that is going to be part of the answer. So no to the Jewish community, and to my community, the Christian community, we need to step up and understand what's happening.
Mm-hmm. So, by the way, great answer. Thank you. And I do want to invite the panelists and anyone who's just following, if there are resources. There have been many, many great questions in advance of this, and I see some popping up now, which we'll try to address. But anyone who has resources, people are asking the question, how can we be more educated? So I'll be glad after this is finished. And if you're not watching it live, but subsequently, then just be in touch with us and at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com. And we'll provide that. Gabe, when Becky was speaking, you were actively nodding. What you want to compliment or say something in addition?
Yeah, I do think, I think she hit one thing that is absolutely spot on, and that is that there's a large percentage of Christianity in America that has a very infantile, if any, knowledge of the Tanakh, especially the Torah, and they're just not educated. And so I think if you don't have that foundation, you can get led into some things. And your specific question, though, was the Christian take on do Jews play the anti-Semitism card too much? And I don't think so, because of the history of the people. What I do think is that at times the cards played inefficiently. And here's where I'm going with that. I want to make sure I explain that, because some people may go, what did he say? There are times that people use the same words, and they have, because of the history of the Jewish people, they mean different things. For example, the word conversion. If you hear a Christian talk about conversion, somebody was converted. In their mind, in the minds of most Baptists living in Oklahoma, for example, because that's the church I grew up in. I go to a different church now, but that's the church I grew up in. And When they say converted, it just means that somebody that wasn't in the faith came into the faith. But when you say converted to a Jew, that means something totally different to a lot of Jews because of the historical context of forced conversions and things that went on to the people. And so there are things that can be said that in the mind of the person that says them aren't anti-Semitic, even if they are, right? Because they, in their mind, it's a different definition. And so where I'm going with that, so I don't become too long-winded, is that I think it's important to consider the heart of the person and who's saying it and what their intent was. There's a group on it, and they're well-intentioned, but there's a group that I follow on Instagram that is a Jewish group that they're aimed at calling out anti-Semitism. And they do a great job majority of time, but sometimes they'll say something, and I'm like, well, if you're somebody that grew up in a small town in Oklahoma, you could say that. And the definition of what you're saying is completely different from how it's perceived on the other end. And so just, you know, having a measure of grace when we're looking at is something anti-Semitic or not, is the heart and the intent of the person. At the same time, the question of the day is Tucker. And I believe you can learn a lot from who he has on his show and when and the questions he asks.
Right. I want to come to that. Yeah. Dumasani, I wanted to pivot with you. Feel free to answer the first question. But when this was all happening, and I think within a minute, too, of when I heard his comments live, I put out a harsh post, and I got a wide range of comments, including pushback. Yours, I think, you're always more articulate, and I think smarter than I am. And yours was one of the, trust me, because I go, wow, when I look at your things, I'm like, I think to myself, wow, I wish I had thought to say that, really. And I saw one of your posts, and it was probably right there, right after that. I don't know, but I saw it really quick, and I don't remember what it was, but it was articulate. What was your immediate thought when you heard that comment from him? And for those of you who don't know what the comment is, that we're going to talk, we're going to unpack that in a little bit, but I wanted to get all of your visceral feedback.
Well, my first comment was, and to the rest of the panelists, they've all spoken of Tucker specifically. So I'll do this, and I'll do the first question that you asked, Jonathan.
Okay.
Tucker has a track record now that goes back to the fall of 22 of being a raging anti-Semite. I tell people the only difference between him and Candace Owens is delivery. They're just as unhinged. It's just he does it more suave. He does it more journalistic flair. She just does it more shrill, but it's the same thing, right? And it's not just the quote-unquote anti-Semitism of what he does. It's the lying. This is what I've shared this with other people. He misrepresents. It's obviously anti-Semitic, but he misrepresents. He lies all the time. For someone who's supposed to be a journalist for the last, 30, 40 years, he lies all the time. And part of our frustration is that it is never called out. So when I commented on it, it had to do with not just what he said, but who said it. Tucker Carlson, who has, again, for these last 3 years, lied about Israel, lied about Netanyahu, lied about Jews, just the whole thing. So I was, you know, I'm kind of old school, not always all that couth and everything. I had the issue with him being in the thing in the first place, right? My issue was with TPUSA. Why would you platform? I get it. I get it that he has a long-standing relationship, yada, yada, yada. But this guy's really, really, really clear. So I was not surprised. I was, as a matter of fact, I thought he was going to say something worse than that, right? Talking about Epstein files or whatever else like that. He's at Charlie Kirk's memorial. He has no decorum, right? No concern about Charlie Kirk's family, you know, the thousands, the millions of people watching. So yeah, I immediately went there. So Jonathan, I know we're going to go further. Go to the first question, answer your question. And you're asking us, each of us. And again, I appreciate you for doing this, Jonathan. And I know you're getting a lot of, from what you've said, a lot of pushback and feedback, a lot of negative and everything, but I get it. I do. Do the Jewish people play the anti-Semitism card? You asked it around that way,
yeah,
a lot of lines. And my answer to you would be sometimes yes. And I've said this before in the past. And I said it in the same context that I've asked about. Whenever I've asked that question, I'm usually asked about in terms of the Black community. That sometimes the Black community plays the racism card too much, right? And that's actually the thing. And now, having said that, yes. And I want to be very, very clear about it. I'll give you an example. About 2 years ago, Jamie Foxx, very well-known actor, singer, everything, made a comment on Twitter that he was going through something personal. And he said, he made a very, very old statement. if they did it to Jesus, meaning they killed Jesus, what about you? He wasn't talking about the Jews, but he was talking about something personal. In other words, he was being personally persecuted. And he says, just like my mama, whoever told me, they did this to Jesus, do it to you. Of course, when many of the Jewish followers saw it, and I completely understand, they thought he was saying the Jews, the pejorative Jews killed Jesus. That's true. Not what he meant. And one of the reasons, and people got upset with me. Some of my Jewish friends got upset. Oh, Demisani, you're making an excuse for Jimmy Fallon. I said, dude, I've called out Louis Farrakhan. Why in the world would I, you know, swallow my words for Jamie Foxx? I'm going to get death threats from saying something about Louis Farrakhan. My point was this, until everybody said, my point was this, simply. Jamie Foxx, to our knowledge, and he's been in the limelight since the 90s, since back in the Living Color days, has never said or done anything that could be construed as anti-Semitic. And we asked people even show us, and some people showed us, there's a event where several years ago, whatever the Black event was, Louis Farrakhan was one of the people there at the event. And they took a picture, said he was there with them, and said, okay, he was there at the thing. We're asking, what has he said or done? We have Louis Farrakhan's whole track record, right? What he said or done? And they couldn't. And said, no, we're not sort of trying to defend him and make excuses. We're simply saying, if you can then connect what he just said to a body of work that has been clearly anti-Israel, anti-Semitic, then yes, that was the Tucker thing, right? And which I know we'll get into the nitty-gritty of what he actually said in the Gospels. But I want to just make sure I make that point clear, Johnny.
This year, you can join Christian leaders from around the world who are lining up to participate in Root and Branch, the newest hands-on, meaningful, and incredibly tangible way for Christians to make a personal connection to Israel, the Israeli people, and to be a blessing to the people and nation which is still suffering from the trauma of a horrific terrorist attack and war. Root and Branch offers unique comfort and a vision of peace with tangible material benefits to Israelis who have suffered the trauma of war, specifically in and around the Gaza border area. Root and Branch is a unique agricultural pilgrimage. You will harvest wild olive trees in communities along the Gaza border that were devastated by the October 7, 2023 terrorist attack and massacre. In these communities and elsewhere, we will plant deep and lasting roots among Israelis of all backgrounds, making Root and Branch all the more innovative. Since the war began, more than $50 million in crops have been saved by volunteers. Root and Branch is the first such initiative to harvest olives. Proceeds from the olive oil that's being made will directly benefit these devastated communities, making Root and Branch a critical and significant project to bless Israel economically and spiritually in multiple ways. Root and Branch is a partnership between the Genesis 123 Foundation and NewPersia.org. For information, videos, and media about the experience, dates, pricing, and how you can register, please visit rootandbranchisrael.com. You kind of picked up on also on what Gabe is saying. You have to understand the context. And I've said this many times before. I'm just going to share a quick personal story. There was around 22, 23. There were two Kentucky legislators who were caught on a hot mic using the phrase "Jew me down." And that's terrible. And it's very hard for a Jewish person to hear that and think anything other than it being anti-Semitic. And it is. But these were two guys who, you know, Gabe, I'm going to pick on you. You're from Oklahoma. They're from Kentucky, similar kind of thing. And they didn't know, but they were, everyone jumped down their throats and started accusing, not just of anti-Semitism, but accusing them of being anti-Semites. And I found that these guys actually apologized and were so repentant. And so I wrote to them, eventually went to the Kentucky State Capitol and met with them. I said, we need to use this as a learning point, but I don't believe we can call everybody who says or thinks something that's anti-Semitic, and it is, that necessarily makes them an anti-Semite, and there's a difference. Let me ask you, Becky, I know you just raised your finger, but I want to pivot. We do need to kind of dissect, because there's still a lot of people who are watching or following this who may be still scratching their head about what it was that was so bad that Tucker said. And we're going to get into that. But as we've kind of come up with the Dumasani and Gabe, you just addressed it from different perspectives. If it had been someone else
speaking there. If it had been a member of the staff of Turning Point or one of one of Charlie Kirk's donors, and he or she had used that same exact same biblical reference of the Jews killing Jesus and hummus eating, whatever, plotting, would it have been perceived as negatively? Someone who doesn't have the history that Tucker has, which we're also going to get into. Becky, did you want to touch on that or pass?
I think there's no, I'm not passing. I think there's two things. One is the platform you're given. And number two, what we just talked about, your background, your understanding of things. So if I put a teenager on a big platform and they make a terrible mistake, we hope that both, and what I was going to say, the reason I was lifting my finger is there's a learning curve on the Jewish side as well. To learn about us, because there's some perceptions like all of us are Catholic. The Pope is the leader of all of us. I get asked that all the time. You know, the Pope did this, the Pope did that. Look what your leader did. And I have to go over that. You know, we're very diverse. We're not a monolithic, you know, group, whatever. The answer to that is it depends on who the person is. There has to be, a measure of understanding. We need to be, you know, smarter. But the organizers of these types of events where there is an enormous platform, I think they need to be held accountable for who they invite and who they continue inviting. And I think that's, thank God we live in America and we can have pushback and campaigns and write to them and hopefully, you know, go through channels, human people that know them, you know, the personal touch and see if we can reach these heads and all that sort of thing. But so if there's not a yes and no answer to that. Now, I will say, though, we're living in a world and I where are the parents teaching their kids? You do not speak this way. You think for yourself. You need to read yourself. You need to go to legitimate sources. Dumasani mentioned that Tucker Carlson is a journalist. Well, in journalism now, you can say lies. You don't have to share the news. Remember, news used to be what happens northeast, west, south. That's the word news, and facts were reported. Well, that's not what's happening anymore. People report feelings, agendas, and who supports them financially. That's what gets in. Now, personally, I believe that when it comes to political parties, organizations, and even us as Christians, we cannot allow even a little bit of anti-Semitism when we hear it. We need to respond. How we respond, depending on the context, the knowledge, the age, platform of the person, that can differ. But being anti-Semitic cannot be normalized in any way. It cannot be part of a political agenda and be accepted. And we're seeing that in the Democrat Party with Mamdani in New York. He's not walked back comments about globalizing the Intifada. That is wrong. Yeah, that is wrong. And it cannot be an accepted ideology in any way, shape, or form. Parents, where are you? Pastors, where are you? Heads of organizations, where are you? This starts in the home. And is it work? Yeah, it's work. We can't be lazy.
Thank you. Anyone else that you, I think you answered it really well, but I'm going to for everybody. But if it had been someone else, any of the other panelists have been someone else who doesn't have the track record that Tucker has and had used that same biblical reference, exactly the same. This is my favorite story. Let me tell you a story. Would we even be having this conversation if it had been someone else?
In my opinion, no, not to this degree. Right? Okay. And I just have to reiterate again, because of his body of work, if you want to use that term, and what he has already been saying and doing, would it have still ruffled feathers? Yeah, absolutely. I think it would have been some controversy. But for you, Jonathan, to take your reputation and all that you've been doing all these years and then have something like this, I don't think you probably would have convened a forum like this if it were just some person who made some sort of statement. But it was Tucker, right? Like I said, I could give some other names, but I won't go there now. So make this all more controversial. But it's somebody else who's who's been over these last several years making a name for themselves as a raging anti-Semite, right? I mean, the first eyebrow raises, why are they at the podium in the first place? And the second thing is, okay, of course they're going to say something like that. So yeah, I think that if it were somebody else, not as Tucker, I don't think it would have been as much of a thing, but it still would have been how they said it and what they actually said. And I know, like you said, I really want to get into what was actually said.
So so one of the things, so let's do that. And I'm going to ask you all to, we have four panelists. Let's just try to unpack that, but I want to set it up by one of the things that shocked me the most is he didn't just relate to that story and how he did it. And to me, it seemed almost as if he had been practicing in front of the mirror for a good bit. It wasn't impulsive and he wasn't reading from a teleprompter, I don't think, but I think it was well rehearsed. But the fact that he alluded to this as his favorite biblical story. And I think if anyone held a gun to each of our heads and everyone who's following this now and held a gun and said, what's your favorite biblical story? I don't think anyone would have come up with this. So who would like to begin to unpack what it was that he did, perhaps chronologically in his recounting? And it was only 1 minute. But in his recounting of his favorite biblical story and why we are having this conversation.
I'll start and then I'm going to rush out a bit. So what he did was he talked about Charlie Kirk's assassination.
Right.
And which was obviously our nation is still reeling from, right?
Yes.
Clearly by Charlie's enemies. So he was drawing a parallel between Charlie Kirk having enemies and being killed, and Jesus having enemies and being killed. Right now, again, that's something people have done for the last 2,000 years. In other words, they've made they'll use Jesus either as a religious or political figure who was assassinated. Again, I'll use it. Can I just use the Black community? Dr. King, the Malcolm X's, who is not a Zion. I'm not talking about how they were with the Jewish people are concerned. I'm talking about leaders, right? Medgar Evers, civil rights leaders, right? That was talked about. We talked about how these men or women stood up for what they believed in were killed. This is what Tucker was doing on its face. Fine in terms of trying to explain that Charlie Kirk was killed by his political and spiritual enemies, if you will. Again, goes back to what we already said before, who Tucker is. Now he ties it into Jesus being killed, Jesus being crucified. And what he does, and this is part of the difficulty in the struggle that we're going to have right here now, he was using what we know is an old anti-Semitic trope, the Jews are Christ killers, right? That's what the oldest one and has done the most damage over the 2,000 years of the church, right? This has been, unfortunately, as our friend Becky was just saying, that the blood that Christians have on their hands, I'm not trying to be morbid, but it's just real, right? This is probably more than any other thing, Jews killed Jesus, right? In the Gospels, it is clear that Jesus is being targeted by certain sects of the Jewish leadership, and this is where it gets difficult, right? This is where the generic thing gets really, really dangerous, that Jews killed Jesus. No, it lets us know that members of the Sanhedrin, this is in the gospel. This isn't the gospel according to Dumisani. This is the gospel according to the scripture, right? That members of the Sanhedrin
By the way, Dumisani, as a pastor and for the Jews in the audience, where is it referenced? This in the
gospel? It's referenced. It's all the gospels have it, but you can go. I would recommend Matthew. Starting at chapter 26.
Okay, thank you.
Starting Matthew chapter 26, for those who would like to read it, Matthew 26, Matthew and John have the most details about it, but each of the gospel writers, and there are four of them, those who don't know Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, there it is in the scripture. I won't read it here, but he talks about in the book of Matthew chapter 26, it says that the leaders came together to put him on trial, and to have him executed. This is what actually is said. Now, Jesus's enemies, quote unquote, politically, were some in the Jewish leadership and, of course, the Roman leadership, because the Romans didn't like him at all. They saw him as an insurrectionist. They thought he's going to be another of those Jewish people who's going to lead the revolt and everything. And as we know, that's how the second temple was destroyed, all of that, right? So he had enemies from all sides. I say it this way, as I've said in the past. I was talking to another gentleman, a Jewish young man. We were talking about this on a podcast. In the context that it is described in the scriptures, Jesus then represents a political and spiritual figure who, is ruffling feathers. And I said, in that regard, especially a Christian would have to see that as a parallel to a prophet in the Tanakh who's ruffling feathers, right? Elijah made Ahab mad, and Jezebel was his wife, right? And they were after him. And you can go on and on, right? So does that is then saying that the fact that the prophets had Jewish enemies, is that an anti-Semitic thing? No, you're just saying this is what actually happened. One of my favorite stories, Jonathan, in the Bible is not that whole trial thing. One of my favorite stories in the Bible is Nehemiah. Nehemiah, who then goes and he's over the reconstruction of the wall. He's addressing the dilapidated state of Jerusalem. He comes from Persia, right? And he comes with a mandate. And we recognize that in the 13 chapters of Nehemiah, the wall is finished in the first 4.5 chapters, right? He even comments and says, boom, wall was done quickly, right? But the pushback that Nehemiah got wasn't so much from building the wall. That was from the outside. It said Arab and the Gershom, the Arab and Sambalat and Tobiah. He gives the names of the Gentiles that are mad that the Jews are reasserting their rights in terms of rebuilding their wall and rebuilding their nation, right? But then as you go on, we see that Nehemiah's enemies are inside. There is Noadiah, who was a prophetess. There's some of the priests who they are frustrated with Nehemiah. Listen, ladies and gentlemen, because he's bringing religious reforms and civil reforms that they don't want to see happen. And now you have a pitting against the leadership that's mad at Nehemiah versus the people from whom he's lifting up a burden, right? That story is not anti-Semitic. The story is talking about Nehemiah's enemies, some of them coming from inside of Israel. The reason why I'm telling that whole thing, I'm not trying to be long-winded, this is how it is seen biblically for the Christian, where Jesus is concerned, not the Jews, but he had enemies that were part of the Jewish leadership, and that was part of what got that process started. Let me end it by saying this, Jonathan. So then when a Tucker, this is what's so nefarious and so evil about what he's doing. He's taking a story that one can go to Matthew right now and read it and say, boom. And if they don't know who Tucker is and what he's attempting to do, they will then sign off on all the other stuff that Tucker says to attack the Jewish people. And that's what's happening now, particularly on the right.
Yeah.
Sorry for all the long-windedness.
Thank you. Wow. I mean, that's...
Tucker was, for many years, was not a believer. He, I think, was actually an atheist. And it's been just a few years that he's come to faith. And let's say that he's growing in that. But I don't know who is informing Tucker Carlson, because what he is spewing is a historical animosity against the Jewish people in the state of Israel.
Yeah,
he is digging into replacement theology, which has been so damning from the beginning of the church towards Jews. And this is the belief that the Jews are no longer God's people, that God has broken his covenant with them, and that now we Christians have taken that place. And that gives us a certain pride and superiority to talk down to the Jew and to say, you're a Christ killer, you killed God, you did not stand for whatever, you did not believe. And we see great minds like Martin Luther, the great reformer that we celebrate. But this man, many Christians don't know, wrote a horrific book against the Jews, and he inspired Hitler to kill Jews, and he inspired and informed his generation. So there can be a garden, there can be great leaders and great people. God can be in a place, but there can also be a snake. And what we're saying about going back to what this thing is about, and we'll be over before we blink, is that I was inspired personally. I'll share about me. I came from church. Someone told me, put it on. I started watching. I was so inspired. Yeah. You have to think on so many levels. Who was there? The authority of a nation, all the authority, not their personal perfection, just what it meant spiritually, the leadership, the young people, the revival, the repentance, the messages. Amazing. Unheard of. A global event. historic. One seed, one boy that died, one young man, okay, because he's still growing up. That's what his parents see him as. Amazing what he's done. And then Tucker spoke. And at that moment, see, I've taken the time. I'm not boasting, but pastor, you need to take the time. Believer, you need to take the time. Jewish person that's watching this, you need to take the time to educate yourself. But that's why I, as a Christian, when I saw that, it's like when you're handling real money and suddenly you can feel a fake bill. It takes practice. Okay, so practice. But I felt it immediately. And it was not just an emotional reaction. It was, I could see the poison. Now, would you drink a little poison in a glass of water if I told you there's just a little bit? And that's why we cannot normalize Tucker Carlson. We can't say, but he does so much good. Oh my God, he does so much good. I love him. I used to like him. I used to like Candace Owen. But hey, don't we have discernment? Isn't every day a new day to think? Did not God give us a brain to use it? So we need to let go of leaders that can deceive us. If you're a Christian, isn't there a spirit of deception working? And there's a lack of knowledge of the word of God. Back to the word, back to the word, back to the word, and be very careful with replacement theology, because I think it's the same old thing with new people sharing it. Like Dumisani said, Candace in one way, Tucker in another way, some, you know, out there in your face, some for younger, you know, generations. And I want to say this, you cannot demonize God's plan in choosing the Jewish people, making a covenant with them that doesn't depend on them. It depends on God. Thank God. That gives me hope as a Christian. And going back to Jesus dying and all that, and the Jews, it was the Romans legally that killed him. And spiritually, I mean, Jesus said, I laid down my own life.
Thank you.
And thirdly, it was our sins that crucified him. So that should, you know, answer many, many of the questions. But culturally and in every way, Christians, Jesus was as Jewish as the next guy. So how can we demonize and hate his people whom God chose to put him in that context? Those were the people, the fathers and the mothers and the leaders and the whole culture that created, that raised this young man that was Jesus, the Jew. Oh, he's not Jewish anymore. He's a UN Jesus. He's a diverse Jesus. Go to the book of Revelation. He does not say that. At the end of the book, he's still self-identifying as a Jew.
On October 7th, 2023, Israel and the Jewish people suffered a massacre and calamity of unprecedented proportion, the largest number of Jews killed in one day since the Holocaust. That this is even something that we even measure is harrowing. Since then, the Jewish people have never felt more alone, in Israel and around the world. It brings us back to when 6 million of us were murdered in the Holocaust, and few rose to protect us. However, those who did, the righteous among the nations, can never be forgotten. They serve as a beacon of light for us today and for future generations. Footsteps was born in the wake of this most recent calamity to give you the opportunity to walk in the footsteps of the righteous among the nations, the righteous Gentiles. Footsteps is a boutique travel experience with a personal touch. You will experience stories of the righteous among the nations, their descendants, of the Jews they saved, and the generations that came from them. Through this, you'll be inspired to follow in their footsteps to inspire new generations of righteous among the nations, especially today when so much of the world is embracing overt anti-Semitism. In a generation where standing up for Israel and the Jewish people is no longer something to be taken for granted, stories of the righteous among the nations call out to us, inspire us, and are models for today and for our next generations. Please join us and get more information at genesis123.co.
Excellent. Becky, you that's a lot to unpack. We could probably do a whole webinar on that.
Short time.
So good. But Gabe, there were some things we've only met now for the first time like this ever. Everyone else I've had relationships with over the years. And the other day when we were chatting just by text, you made a comment that picked up on something that Becky just alluded to. And I want it, but before I ask you to comment on it, sometime in this past week, I don't remember when, I had an hour and a half conversation with a pastor friend who didn't understand why what Tucker said was anti-Semitic. And I had to explain it. And that was my affirmation. I think that was last Saturday night. And that was my affirmation that this conversation needed to happen with Grace. And she made a great comment, which was that she thinks Tucker is just misunderstood and is a new Christian. And Becky, you alluded to that because he may have been an atheist before. Gabe, you had made a comment in terms of his denomination. I don't want to bring this down to beating up on denominations, but maybe can you speak theologically as to why you made that comment?
Let me try and unpack this logically in an order. So this, and Becky hit on replacement theology, which ties directly into the comment that I had made about his church and background. He was originally baptized as a child into the Episcopal Church. Tucker was then an atheist for a large majority of his adult life until a few years ago, and he began to return to the Episcopal Church, particularly the Anglican branch. Now, the Episcopal Church, I want to be clear on this, has changed some of their historical views. The replacement theology bunch, and I'm surrounded by people here who I think it's obvious may know the Bible better than me at this point, so by hearing them speak. But early in the church, everyone wants to focus on this historically, and it started with Eusebius and Justin Martyr and Augustine and some of these other early church, 100 to 325 Council of Nicaea church leaders, right, among the Christian church. And a lot of them were not Jewish. They were Gentile converts from around the world, right, that rose to positions of leadership and influence. And they got a lot of things right, but they got Israel and the Jewish people very wrong. And that thread from those guys in Augustine can be traced through Martin Luther, can be traced to 1924, to a young German man standing up in front of a few thousand Christians in Berlin and giving a speech talking about the final solution and rising to power. And we all know where that ended up. And so the Episcopal Church, the Anglican branch that he's a part of, historically taught replacement theology. Now, they all had a big problem on their hands in 1948. That the Jews having been abandoned by God and replaced sounded real good from about AD 70 until 1947, right? And in 1948, they got a big problem on their hands because the Bible very clearly says that in the end days, I will gather my people from among the nations, and speaks of a regathering of the Jewish people returning to the land, right? And returning from the diaspora. And when that happens on May 14th, 1948, all of a sudden there's an Israel. They got a big problem. All these churches have a big problem theologically. And some of them acknowledged that, hey, we were wrong on this and changed their official stance. Others went the route that you see popping up for some reason right now in social media a lot. And that is that Tucker Carlson and his beloved nun, who I disdain that episode. I have so much to say.
There are people who where I wanted to go with the next level of the conversation. But there are people who don't know what you mean by Tucker Carlson's nun.
OK, so he has this nun on back. I think it was August 6th, somewhere around there. Maybe after that, he has an episode with a nun who she's an Orthodox church nun who was born in America, is related to some high-ranking people with some news media organizations in the United States.
Say, and it's George Stephanopoulos' sister, I think, right?
It is. It is sister or cousin, one of the two. I think sister. And she moves in the late 90s to Bethlehem and is a nun there. And she's obviously vehemently anti-Semitic. And so he has her on. And we could talk about that episode a lot, but back to where I was going with his theology, I think, he may have some influences. If you research the pastors and things that he follows, some of them still hold to a very strict replacement theology that what the nun was saying, and that's where I was going with the nun, is that Israel today has nothing to do with biblical Israel. It's not the same thing at all. And maybe those Jews aren't even the Jews from the Bible. And that's what they espouse a lot. And some of the pastors he associates with and follows, if you get to researching it, have historically held that same view. And so that's problematic. But back to the thing of Jesus, the thing that gets missed a lot is that the gospel message, if you will, Christianity, people, you know, these churches historically went down this road of the Jews killed Jesus, right? But the Jews spread the message of the Bible and the gospel and the story of Jesus throughout the entire world and gave their lives for it. You got to remember, these authors of the New Testament, with basically one exception, were all Jews. They grew up in the temple. They were as Jewish as Jewish gets. And the guy that they're telling the message about was as Jewish as Jewish gets.
Yes.
And, you know, they want to say, and it's clear in the New Testament, there's a small portion of the leadership of the Jews that did this. There were also 5,000 to 7,000 people at a time that came to hear him speak and supported him and welcomed him with palm branches into Jerusalem. And those were also Jews. So, you know, you can make a good argument that it was a very small minority in leadership that had the issue, and that was political. It was not necessarily the Jewish people as a whole. And there's plenty of examples of Jews that were avid supporters of Jesus. And yes. I think that's really important not to let that get lost in this message of replacement that some people want to preach, which I personally believe is completely demonic. I could not be more against anything, but anyway, I've probably said enough unless you want me to expound.
Oh, no, thank you. I actually wanted to, because I'm just suddenly looking at the time that we could go on for quite a while, but in deference to all of your schedules, we'll go on as long as we can. But Alejandro, I wanted to come to you. You were very vocal on my post and in some of your own. In terms of Tucker, and I'm wondering what Gabe just mentioned, the episode that Tucker, now going to his history, right? I think we've established that we wouldn't be having this conversation if it had been most other people using the same biblical reference, but we'd be distraught and maybe discussing it amongst ourselves. But Tucker does have a history, and Dumasani, thank you for pointing out that it's going back to 2022. But there are other episodes, and I think Alejandro, I'm not putting you on the spot. There are other things that you had raised in terms of his history and other things that he's done. Could you pick just one and elaborate? So those following and are wondering, why are we picking on Tucker Carlson?
Well, actually, I mean, there's been so many different guests that he's had. He even had, Senator, his name.
Oh, Ted Cruz, your senator.
News, yes, Ted Cruz, and in a very prideful attitude, his wonder is asking him like, why do we even have to bless Israel? Like, where is that in the? You don't even know your Bible. I mean, just the amount of comments that he's made. He was even, just. Saying he had an interview, I can't remember with who, where he was just saying that the IDF is killing the people that are coming for aid. I mean, just blatant lies. And just to your point, if someone else other than Tucker had made those comments, maybe it wouldn't be perceived as anti-Semitic. But not only that, just let's understand the climate that we're living on today. Let's understand the rise in anti-Semitism that we've had in the past couple of years. I mean, we've seen close to 10,000 incidents in America alone of anti-Semitism ever since October 7. And just understanding what has happened in our college campuses, you know, it's like we as Christians have to be so careful and mindful in what we say against the Jewish people, because we have been called to be your ally. We have been called to bless you. I mean, even in our New Testament, we're commanded to bless Israel, even financially. Even Paul in Romans 11, you know, he says, do not be ignorant, do not be prideful. Like, the root sustains you. So, I also want to challenge even my Christian friends, because not too long ago, we had this discussion with family members that are believers, no matter whether you're Baptist or whatever, it's like, don't be a biblically illiterate. Like, read your Bible. Don't be swayed by what you hear on the news. Don't be swayed by what you hear by a very important conservative voice. Just go back to the Word of God and be faithful to the Word of God says. Because Listen, I was just reading an article on the New York Post where they're saying that Tucker Carlson is influencing Gen Z to become anti-Semitic because of the power of his voice.
Yes.
He's making declarations that Israel controls the U.S. government, as you were asking me.
That was very recent.
And that the U.S. controls the global media. I mean, these were things that the Nazi party used, saying, oh, the Jews control the world. They control the economy. The reminiscence, what we're seeing, we're seeing things that had happened in the past and that led to the Holocaust. We're seeing things that are very similar today. Yeah. I think as Christians, we have to be so careful. We have mindful.
Not for the purpose of ganging up, although we're all in agreement, but I would like to elucidate for those who are following, who may still don't understand the trend that we've been talking about of Tucker's remarks. Alejandra, you just mentioned a couple. Gabe, you mentioned with the nun specifically. I can provide links if people want, or you can Google them. I try not to look myself, but you sort of want to witness this stuff to see how bad it is. Becky first, then Dumasani. Just briefly, is there another incident that you can think of just historically in the last 3 years now, or 3.5 years, that we've seen him blossom, if you will, in this way?
I'm not an expert in Tucker because I don't follow that man. I know about his interview with the Greek American Orthodox Miss Mother Agapia, and basically what she said was a claim that Israel intends to blow up Al-Aqsa Mosque and rebuild the temple there because that's where, you know, because this was a Muslim enclave forever and ever, which is historically incorrect. And Israel has no plans to do that. And people don't even know that Moshe Dayan handed it over to the Jordanian Waqf, and they control that, although it's under the jurisdiction of Israeli police, if there should be a problem. But they control that place up there. But people don't know this stuff because people don't take the time. I'm going to defer to Dumasani. Dumasani, you probably know more, and you can answer better.
But before Dumasani speaks, you just alluded to something that's important with the interviews that he does. Even if you don't follow them or dissect them, the one thing that he... First of all, he's platforming these people. Second of all, he's lobbying them softball questions. And third of all, he's not challenging when they're historically or theologically inaccurate. Dumasani, do you want to, on this particular topic, do you want to play cleanup batter and just hit it home in terms of what one or two other of these instances?
So, yeah, there's a list of them. And I need to touch on the biblical part one last time too, John, but let's start with this first. So like I said, it's the last 3 years in particular, but I'll point people to a couple of things real quick. Number one, I co-authored an article in Tablet about Tucker Carlson called The Arsonist, because the nun that he had on a few weeks ago was the second time he did a hit job on Israel where Christians are concerned. He had on a pastor from Bethlehem about 2 years ago or something like that.
Mother Isaac.
Yes. And in my opinion, it was even worse in terms of an interview because Tucker does this all the time. But if you go and watch it, he introduces the interview by speaking directly to Christians and saying, you Christians, basically, I'm paraphrasing, who support Israel with your tax dollars, yada, yada. This is how Israel treats Christians. And everything else after that was a blood libel. It was all of that, right? But it was direct. He was very, very clear. This is directed to Christian support for Israel. And where does Israel's greatest support come from? The United States? Christians, right? So Tucker was very, very clear about what he was doing. And this Munter Isaac, like you said, he's a supporter of Hamas. He supported October the 7th, the whole thing, right? And not only that, we wrote that article, and then our organization did some other things as well. And I made the point then that I've been in ministry almost all of my life. As a young pastor and minister back in the 90s, I told this story really quickly, Jonathan. I became aware of the persecuted church in the 80s while in college, right? I grew up in church all my life, but where there weren't really discussions about the church persecution of Christians in different parts of the world. That's not something that was ever really talked about. So I was in college when I first found out about Europe, Asia, Africa, how Christians are dying for their faith by the thousands every year, right? So that's where I began to first advocate back in the 90s. So that's where my thing started. So for Tucker, who I think Becky was saying, whenever he got saved, whatever his background is, I don't know. All I know is he's been in media for decades. And I've seen him, he was on Fox, CNN, all those other places, right? Never, ever, ever heard Tucker use his platform ever one time to talk about the persecution of Christians. Nigeria, Sudan, pick a place, Tucker, just pick one place, right? Never. The only time he's ever discussed it is to bash Israel and to lie about Israel, the freest place in the Middle East where Christians are growing in number, right? So that was my first thing. So Tucker's been doing that. But the other thing I'll give you is real quickly, Jonathan, what I call the blood libel. Right shortly after that, he kept coming off the neocons. He kept trying to couch it in political terms, right? All these wars and endless wars. And no American wants endless wars, right? We can all agree that we don't want to just fight, and billions and trillions of dollars. So Tucker will do the nefarious thing like he did with that gospel story. He'll take something, there's a kernel of truth there, and then he'll shove something else down your throat, which is poison that Becky was saying, right? So what he's been doing is saying that because we don't want endless wars, right, people then, Christians particularly, who stand on the side of Israel and Israel's relationship with the United States, its military relationship, all those things, you are then a warmonger by virtue of the fact that you actually want a strong U.S.-Israel relationship and you want to see that continue on and Israel's on the front line of the defense and blah, 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 blah. You are a warmonger. And what he did, he called out, starting with Ben Shapiro specifically, and this is the other lie that he would say. He kept telling people, he said this verbatim, ladies and gentlemen, so go Google it. Ben Shapiro wants American troops on the ground in Israel. That has always been a lie. I don't know of any Israel supporter in the United States, Christian or Jewish or whatever, right, who wants American troops in Gaza, in Tel Aviv, nowhere, right? But Tucker kept saying it, and his little minions, they all said, another little podcast, they all started saying that it's like Joseph Goebbels, just keep saying it over and over and over again. And so now there are many people on the right who believe that Ben Shapiro or myself or anybody on this panel want is American troops right now to fly and fight. This Ben Shapiro's never said that. This is nowhere in any of our documents, anything like that. That has nothing to do with anybody's policy. That's part of Tucker's thing. He's a liar, right? He obscures and then he'll put it out there on his platform with thousands, with millions, and he'll just keep repeating it. So last part, Jonathan. So again, is the reason why I pointed out Matthew, you asked me where it was, so the people could read it. And as Christians, and I've said as a pastor, we have to be really true to, in terms of text, right? In other words, here's what something says. I can talk about how somebody's twisting it, right? Jonathan, we learned from our Jewish brothers and sisters because we wouldn't have the scriptures at all if it wasn't for our Jewish brothers and sisters, right? Because for us, the New Testament is built on the foundation of the Tanakh. There's no Tanakh, there's New Testament, right? Because how would we even know what a prophet was except from the Tanakh? But here's my point, right? Here's the thing. We learn from our sages. Josh, you tell me. The understanding of understanding scripture is that acronym for part is Peshat. Peshat is the first one, the P, right? The plain sense of the text, right? So we start from there. Before we start to preach and teach and yada, 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 the sages teach us that we have to understand. I say us, now I'm talking about our sages. Paul called the Jewish people our older brothers. So I'm saying the us in that sense, right? They teach us that we have to understand and hold to the plain sense of the text first. Before I start riffing on whatever I think Psalm 2 says, let's actually see what it actually says, right? That's why I said in the text, it says that these leaders came against, right? But again, if you're going to tell the quote-unquote gospel story, everybody's Jewish in the first place, right? In other words, if you to say that somehow there were no Jews involved in this plot against Jesus is to say, remember how the left says that Jesus was a Palestinian? You're actually going on the same direction at that point, right? Because now you're going to try to erase the Jewish text. And as these other people have said, in the book of Acts, it talks about people from the Sanhedrin who became believers in Jesus, priests.
and rabbis actually become followers of Jesus in the actual thing. So here's my point. As John Hagee would say, Jesus was Jewish, the apostles were Jewish, his parents were Jewish, the prophets were Jewish, everybody was Jewish. So when you're talking about this whole very difficult thing, and I'll say, I'll land my plan here, Jonathan. As my fellow panelists have said, the amount of destruction that has been fallen the Jewish people for being called Christ killers, that's what a Christian would have to understand, who's not a Tucker Carlson, if you're going to get up at a place like a memorial service for this man where millions of people are watching and then lob this anti-Semitic grenade, you'd have to know what you were doing. Tucker knew exactly what he's doing, right? In the story, yes. Is that, are the Jewish people involved? Yes. But that's not what Tucker was saying. What Tucker was saying was the Jews killed Jesus Charlie's enemies killed him. That's why the hummus, that's why the Jerusalem thing, the whole thing. This is what I'm saying. If you take it all in the context, the blood libels against Ben Shapiro, the blood libels against Christian Zionists, the lies about how Israel treats Christians, clearly Tucker has an anti-Semite agenda. That's why he said what he said.
The restoration of Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel was an earth-shattering event. For Christians, it was a confirmation that God always keeps his covenantal promises. Today, we are blessed to see God's fingerprints in the modern miracle of the land of Israel playing out in our lives among the people and in the state of Israel. This year, on the occasion of Israel's 75th anniversary, the Genesis 123 Foundation has been privileged to bring together 75 Christian leaders from around the world to lend their unique voices, sharing their personal faith experiences relating to Israel, and their in-depth insight into Israel's history and spiritual significance, creating an historical, one-of-a-kind, high-end coffee table book, Israel the Miracle. Israel the Miracle's stunning imagery will fill your home with the hope of fulfilled promises and conversations about Israel. It's a perfect gift to anyone for any occasion, and most of all, to yourself. You'll also be a blessing to Israel, knowing that the proceeds will go to bless Israelis of all backgrounds. Be a part of Israel the Miracle and bring the land, the people, and the state of Israel into your heart and into your home. Visit israelthemiracle.com to get your limited edition copy today.
No, this is great. The one thing that I we're on the eve of Yom Kippur, so I'm going to take this instance to apologize to all of you because none of you are getting enough time and we could go on for hours, but I do want to begin to wrap it up. There's some great questions coming in here. Becky, you're reading them. It's really impossible to read and address them all, but I want to pick up on something that Faith McDonald has said, which she writes, and Gabe's nodding. I don't know if everyone can see it, but I want to read her question and I want to expand it. And then we're going to use that as the beginning of the wrapping up. Faith writes, is there any plan to do an open letter to TPUSA, Turning Point USA, from all of us concerned, maybe referencing the lovely last letter that Charlie sent to Prime Minister Netanyahu saying that they should disavow any innuendos that Tucker Carlson made? I think that's a great question. I'd like to expand it and by asking one question that's generic. What's the message to go to Turning Point USA in general as they regroup following Charlie's assassination? And second of all, and I think I know this might be inappropriate, but don't answer it if you don't want to. But what do you think Charlie Kirk would be saying to Tucker about this right now? And because we're beginning to wrap up, I want to start where we began. Alejandra, I'm going to throw the ball in your corner to comment on any of that.
Well, why do I think that Charlie Kirk was a strong supporter of Israel? In fact, he wanted to make a change in the media because he knew that Israel was losing the war in the media because of misinformation. And I think Charlie Kirk would have been very grieved by Tucker's comments. And it is sad. I mean, it was a beautiful memorial. It was very sad that Tucker was there. I don't think TPS USA knew that, you know, Tucker's agenda. I don't think it was, I think it's just out of their hands. I mean, I'll be happy to write a letter and just express how grieved I am of what happened publicly, because thousands, if not millions, of people were listening. But yeah, I definitely, Charlie Kirk was an advocate for Israel, and I think he would have been greatly grieved by Tucker's comments and but what he had been has been doing in the past couple of years, for sure.
Thank you, Gabe. You're nodding. What do you on any of that?
Yeah. So, I think something does need to be said, because I think Turning Point is a great organization. And I think, you know, Charlie's last letter has now been posted online, I guess, today. And it's not at all how the anti-Semites were wanting everyone to believe that the letter was. In fact, it's just asking Israel to do a better job of putting out communications to defend themselves and talking over and over about how much he loves Israel. And so, yeah, but I think as an organization, you know, Tucker making that comment once doesn't necessarily stain the organization, but if after he makes that comment, they continue to give him a platform at TPUSA events, they take him to college campuses, something like that, there's some of us like myself who are going to have to make a decision of would we ever listen to, watch, or support anything they do from that point on. He could break that organization. And so I do think, you know, Faith's comment on the letter, it's not a bad idea, because I think they need to understand that there's a lot of people who currently support them and watch their podcast and everything else, so that would be a breaking point.
And want them to continue to succeed remarkably. Yeah.
The other thing that Faith said in another comment, I just want to clarify, there is a difference in Episcopal and Anglican in their current stance. And she said that in the second comment, and that's my fault earlier, because I was talking about Tucker, I don't think I was clear enough in dividing the line that he was baptized in from birth and raised as a young child with Episcopal doctrines from some pastors that still hold replacement theology. He now, because he breaks with them on issues related to same-sex marriage and some other things, he has gone more to the Anglican Church. But I think he's brought some of those earlier teachings with him in his mindset. I didn't mean to say that the Anglican stance on Israel and the Episcopal stance on Israel are the exact same thing. And it's to Faith's comment, I'm sorry if it sounded that way.
Thank you for that clarification. Becky, we were talking offline also in terms of the future and Turning Point USA. And in fact, I shared with you today, because of that, that I received a message that Tucker's, in fact, speaking on behalf of Turning Point at, I forget which college campus, but, and there's now a Faith, you asked the question about what should we do. Now there's actually an email campaign to get them to withdraw that Tucker shouldn't be. But what are your thoughts on all of this as it relates to Turning Point? I think we all agree we want Turning Point to be even more successful than it was.
Sorry, dropped my paper. Okay. Look, I think that I think it's early days for his wife. Can we show some grace? That's what I think to begin with. But we need to call a spade a spade. I think that if we have connections that could reach her, like I said earlier, we should use them. I think that we could write a letter and see, you know, I think if it would reach them and they would read it and all that. I think we've done the right thing in having this webinar, and I hope many, many people see it. But I feel that in America, we've gone through so much. We're stressed as conservatives, Bible-believing people, not just Christians, anyone that had basic common sense for the last, you know, decade or whatever, that when we hear even half-truths from people that once were doing well, we're so afraid of letting go. And we need to, again, think for ourselves, think critically, And I want to say to people, your life will go on without Tucker Carlson. You can get your information from better sources. And we need not to be so emotional and be so comforted and get our information and our encouragement from sources such as that. Now, what do we do? Because some of the people in the chat were asking questions about our young people. We have been traumatized seeing the turn our young people took, the anti-Semitic marches, how they march for Hamas and pro-Palestinian issues, and how they're confused and how they're even angry, and they call Israel colonists and colonizers, and they're not even the original people of the land. We've heard so much garbage, not rooted in facts. Again, it's all emotional, but we're responding in an emotional way too, because we're responding with fear. Oh my God, look at the funeral. Look at what's happening. It's a revolution, a revival, a good thing for God. And it'll eventually be good for Israel if people come back to the Bible. So what are we going to do? And we're leading with fear. Parents, pastors, individuals, believers, Turning Point Years say, I think that God is using, but is not bigger than all the churches, is not bigger than your influence with your own kid. And yes, these are people that can help and have influence. So what do we do? Let's see how we can influence Turning Point and reach the heads and the people that we know. Let's do that. Let's have initiatives. It's America. We have free speech. Let's push back. But secondarily, you push back at home. I'll never forget when there were some kind of riots. There was this African-American mother that saw her kid rioting on the street. She went and beat him up and dragged him out and saved him. You know, it was so refreshing. It's called parenting. So we can do this. I'm Puerto Rican, you know, and I do it with my kids. My kids are 30 and 28, you know, and thank God they're not rioting. But if I see anything that I don't like, they get pushback. So Turning Point is not a parent. It's not a church. And the buck stops with each individual, even your kids, but grandparents, uncles, aunts, everybody, we have a part, you know, to play in this. But I'm not ready to chuck Turning Point. Honestly, no. I think great organization. They're doing amazing things. The potential is unbelievable, but they have a snake in the garden.
Okay. Before Dumasani, before you also take the last answer to that, I'm just asking if Jonathan Houseman, who is here, who we wanted to have come and join in the end. If you want to join, just raise your hand and we'll promote you to the panelist. I think we're having a technical issue. Dumasani, go.
So our take is a little, our organization wrote an article, two articles directly after Charlie Kirk's murder. I wrote one, my son wrote a second one. The second one that he wrote is entitled Charlie Kirk and Israel, It's Complicated. It's not a plug for our Substack. That's not what I'm doing. I'm saying that for people, if they want to, they get some more context, because obviously I can't unpack
it. You'll give me, I'm going to collect all of the resources and I'm going to send it out with the video, and any links you all want to share, let's educate. Yeah.
We made some people angry by those, not most, but the vast majority of it was just informed. And what I mean by that is that we had, I have to say again, it's really unfortunate that we're having to have this conversation now with this young man having been murdered with a wife and two children and all of it. It's just, unfortunately, it is what it is. We are here now. We pointed out some, what we called inconsistencies with some of Charlie's statements, not attacking. Meaning, from the beginning, we talked about some things. The reason why we were pointing out those things were Israel and the war in Gaza is because we were making it clear that Israel's enemies, Charlie's enemies, and enemies of the Jewish people were using these things the same way that Tucker did what he did at the memorial, right? And again, people have to go and read it. One of the things that we had said was that TPUSA, in light of these types of things, and now I have to call out other names because people may or may not be aware of this. Tucker is one on the right. It's a growing number. Steve Bannon, who has consistently said that Israel is not an ally, it is a protectorate, and that she bit off more than she could chew. And he's calling for regime change against Netanyahu. This is the same Steve Bannon who was in the White House during Trump's first administration. Marjorie Taylor Greene, who wants organizations like CUFI and AIPAC to be made illegal. She, as far as she's concerned, we are foreign agents of Israel. And the list is growing, right? What's my point? Each of these people are platformed on TPUSA. And they have received zero pushback, zero commentary before and now after Charlie's passing. This is not me attacking.
This is not me coming against. I'm just, once again, we're going to have to, what does it say in Isaiah? Come, let us reason together, saith the Lord, right? So this is one of those reason together, right? Part of the danger of where a TPUSA is now, as Becky was saying, it's more of the snake. There's several snakes. There is great cause for concern about the future direction of TPUSA. I'm not prophesying. I'm not saying what's going to happen. I'm saying there's enough of a concern there. The last example. About a week ago, Marjorie Taylor Greene posted a screenshot of her text conversation with Charlie, right? Because remember, very anti-Israel, very anti-Semitic. And people who don't know about it, those of you who are watching and say, I don't know, Marjorie, go and Google it. We have all the receipts. I'm not just saying, as our Jewish friends would say, this is not Lashon Hara. This is not me just trying to put a bad mouth on something. I'm telling you the truth of what's actually going on, right? So Charlie had asked her to come to one of the events so they could debate the whole, you know, AIPAC thing. And then my point I made to someone else, that's fine because that was Charlie's strength. He wanted to sit down with everyone. Here's the problem. My problem, Jonathan, was this. Marjorie Taylor Greene, like Tucker, like the others I named, this is not just about your opinion. Fine, you don't want Israel. You're an American. You don't have a close relationship with Israel. That's your opinion. Fine. You know, it was a First Amendment speech, right? But you don't get to lie and not have that called out. Marjorie Taylor Greene says that an American citizen who wants Israel, who lobbies Congress, and again, like I said before, those who don't understand, lobby is not a bad word. Now, there's a lot of bad lobbyists out there, but lobbying is simply me going to my senator and saying, hey, I want Israel in the U.S. to blah, 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 blah. There's nothing wrong with that. Marjorie Taylor Greene says that I am acting as a foreign agent of the state of Israel, and yes, I should have to register with the FARA Act. That is a blatant lie, Jonathan. Here's my point. You're going to invite her on your stage on TPUSA to have a debate, but fine, that's fine. But could you still then tell the truth? Tell them she's not telling the truth, right?
Yes.
That's where the waters have really gotten murky, right? They're just going to have a, let's just platform and let's just have, okay, but if you're not going to call out the lies and the slanders and the blood libels, you're going to get what you're getting. That's part of what's going on right now.
Thank you. Panel, stick around for a minute. We're going to have a close with my friend, Rabbi Jonathan Hausman, who just joined. But I want to thank you all and everybody who's joining. So I don't forget at the end, you will have a recording of this to see and share tomorrow. It will come out as an audio in the podcast in the coming weeks, whenever we slot it in Inspiration from Zion, to the extent that Zoom allows me to save all of your great questions and comments and the chat. I'm glad to share and continue a dialogue. But I'm really grateful for all of you. I believe we've done what we established to do here, which is to elevate the conversation. But I know we could have gone on for a lot longer. So thank you all. Rabbi Jonathan Hausman obviously is very well prepared for Yom Kippur. He has his sermons written, so he's able to sit around and join us today. And always a pleasure to have him join and share comments and close us in prayer.
First of all, I'm not prepared for Yom Kippur, but thank you for that endorsement, John. I appreciate it. And I'm not just your friend, but I'm Dumasani's friend as well. So, you know, a comment before a closing prayer. I have to tell you all, I've been scribbling notes furiously while this conversation has been taking place, and I've been typing on my screen with all kinds of ideas and thoughts and things to share. And I think what I'd like to do is just share a story, an incident that occurred in a conversation with my late wife and me, dealing with Tucker Carlson. Now, I don't know how many people are, specifically Tucker Carlson. I don't know how many people remember this. Tucker Carlson, if I remember correctly, got his start on CNN, and then he transitioned over to MSNBC with whatever the name of this, Tucker Tonight. I don't remember what it was. Tucker on Broadway. I don't remember what the show was before he got his gig with Fox News in 2009. And I remember my late wife saying, oh, you must be very pleased. You know, here's Fox. And politically, my wife was pretty much on the other side, except when it came to Israel. So I just remember Susan saying to me, geez, you must be fairly pleased that Tucker Carlson is making this transition over to Fox News. He's one of your guys. And I said, well, what does one of my guys mean? He said, you know, another one of you, you're knuckle scraping Neanderthals. No, Jonathan, that's the exact term she used. And I said to Susan, this may be surprising, but I don't like Tucker Carlson. I've never liked Tucker Carlson, and I will continue not to like Tucker Carlson. I said, for what little TV I watch, I'll listen to him just because I need to know what he's saying. But I don't like the guy. I don't trust the guy. And my wife was absolutely 100% shocked. Shocked. Why don't you like him? I said, because he's an isolationist. And if history has taught us anything, those people who are firm isolationists don't like Jews. Okay. They foster historically anti-Semitism by looking inward at a national narrative, and they want to blame the outsider. And historically, we Jews are the quintessential all outsiders. All right. We are a part of societies, and we are a part of societies. And that's just the way it's worked for thousands of years. And I said, and I don't think that it's going to change with this guy now having this huge platform on Fox News. And I just have to say, I'm glad my wife's not around, not alive to see what's happening. Because she was a lot smarter than I, but here was this one instance where I can honestly say I was right and she was wrong. Tucker Carlson is exactly what he purported to be 20 years ago. It just hasn't changed. He's just moved in to different platforms to get this message across. And it's as simple as that. And if you're Jewish, should it cause you concern? Well, as I said, at a night to honor Israel, not too long ago, to an audible gasp to the crowd, if you're Jewish, what's your exit plan? Because if you think it can't happen here, it can. I said, I'm stuck here. My wife is buried here in the United States. I'm not going anywhere. I said, but if you think that I don't have an exit plan for my daughter, I do. It's just the era in which we live. If we Jews and our allies and everybody who's part of this panel is an ally, I want you to know I think of you that way. And Dumasadi, you and I go back many years. I know you are that way. You can only have a Jewish ally. You can only have a Jewish ally if that Jew understands what he or she's about. Okay? And it comes down to projecting Jewish strength. It comes down to protecting Jewish sovereignty. And it comes to understanding what Jewish dignity is all about. And Jewish dignity is about defining yourself and by refusing to have others define you. It's as simple as that. It's as simple as that. Christians, many Christians have the Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. We Jews have a trilogy, and it's called God, Torah, and Israel. And Israel means the nation of Israel, which happens to include the state of Israel, but all Jews everywhere, along with Israel, Artseno, Hakadoshava, Hakaduma, our ancient and holy land. A table can stand on three legs. It can't stand on two. But that table at three legs has to be surrounded by people filled with pride and understanding who they are and what they stand for. And I just think that's more than anything else, Jonathan, I think that's the appropriate message going into Yom Kippur.
Okay.
So just a little prayer, something from the liturgy that we've been reciting since Slichot, the penitential season began before Rosh Hashanah, as a matter of fact. In Hebrew, we recite Hate Elokai Oznecha Ushama, give ear, O Lord, in hear, open your eyes and see our desolation, see what your city has become, see what your city can become, and help us find our strength, for it lies in righteousness. And that is the meaning of our pleadings before you. Show us your strength, show us your compassion, and most of all, show us that the people who bear your name still walk with pride.
Amen. Thank you. Thank you all, the panelists. Thank you all for who have joined us live and are following this afterward. And as we have done now for, I don't know how many of the 4 years that Inspiration from Zion, just having passed our 200th episode, we always like to give away some incentive or give you a reason to keep coming back. We have a program called From Jonathan's Bookshelf. And every month we give away a free book. For the last 2 years, since our book came out, Israel the Miracle, it's been that. So all we ask that you do is like, follow, or comment and share the link to this program on whatever platform. And we follow that and we pick one person at random to receive a free copy of Israel the Miracle. It's a $75 retail value. You can get more information at IsraelTheMiracle.com. We're always grateful that the podcast is sponsored by our friends at the Willow Run Greenhouse in Culpeper, Virginia. And if you're ever in the area, pop in and thank them for helping make conversations like this possible. And thanks to our friends, the Coyne family, as well, for their meaningful sponsorship. Inspiration from Zion and all the Genesis 123 Foundation programs are made possible by donations. So please consider joining us to help continue the dialogue and build bridges. And if you'd like to sponsor a future episode in honor or memory of a loved one or special occasion, please be in touch at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com. We'd always love to hear your comments as part of a dialogue, and especially to share comments about traditional Judaism for our Ask the Rabbi programs. Please share this with others who will also find it of interest, and continue to join us right here as we bring you more meaningful conversations about unique topics relating to Israel that you won't hear anywhere else. Wherever you are, I pray that you and your loved ones are all safe and healthy, and I send my blessings from right here in the Judean Mountains. God bless you. Hallelujah.